This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome back to the Beyond Broadcast podcast, a show which takes a behind-the-scenes look at industry professionals and their lives working in the broadcasting and entertainment industry. Today, I'm speaking with Jeff McTainch, Southern by heart and seen by many as the voice of provincial rugby. Jeff has been a staple part of the news cycle, whether it be as an anchor at midday or giving us the lowdown on the action in some of the biggest sporting events. His hit series, Indoors with Jeff, as well as Golden Oldies FM, will probably never make a return unless we somehow slip into another global pandemic. But Jeff will certainly be here for the long haul after last year becoming the fourth ever person to call an All Blacks game for Sky. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Jamie. Appreciate it.
So are we ever going to get Indoors with Jeff again? I ended up actually watching every episode to kind of get myself up to speed with this other side venture that you had during the COVID quarantine. Or is it never going to make a comeback?
Yeah, I've had a few people ask about that and how that sort of came about. I think my wife was really keen to just keep me busy because she was sick of me during the lockdown period, right? So I thought, what could I do and keep my hand in and kind of, I really just entertain myself and make light of, I guess, a situation that that wasn't great for a lot of people. And I thought of this idea of Indoors with Jeff, and basically it was just commentating day-to-day mundane activities, whether it was making a coffee or taking out the rubbish or whatever it was. There was one video, there was a car stuck up. We live in Eden Terrace in central Auckland, and there was a car that was broken down up near Ponsonby Road, and I sort of zoomed in on it with my phone and thought, maybe we should do some V8 supercars commentary or something like that. So just had a bit of fun with it, but started posting it and it got a bit of traction and a few people found it entertaining. So that was kind of job done. Just have a bit of fun with the lockdown period, and had we have a park over the back of our apartment building here called Basque Park, and there was a few dogs running around. So I thought, okay, well, that's clearly Tuck's Wonder Dogs. So we did that as well, and no, it was good. It was just an interesting way of passing the time, and as I say, kept us busy.
And one other question, mate, because you said you lived in Eden Terrace, because I lived around the area as well. Was the reason being that it was quite close to the Media Works offices? Was that the kind of like main point of choosing around that area?
Funny that, but no, it was really just the only apartment we could afford to buy 10 odd years ago, when prices were still really, really high in central Auckland. But we managed to get a foot on the ladder. But no, it was useful that it was just down the road from TV3 Media Works, where I was working at the time. So handy. But no, we've been here since around 2014 in Eden Terrace. But it's great. It's nice to be so centrally located and near the motorways and things. So no, we really, really enjoy it.
And being Southern born and bred, has it taken you a while to finally get used to the fact that you don't hate Aucklanders? I feel like that's always been a thing for anyone from Christchurch, Dunedin, or anywhere kind of below the kind of Wellington area, that they kind of have this like seething hatred of Aucklanders, but slowly like learn to love them eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I think when I was growing up in Dunedin, Dad would take me to Carisbrook to watch Otago play, or the Highlanders, or the All Blacks, or whoever was there playing, whether it was the Black Caps or whatever. And but I do remember going to a few Otago games and seeing these, they must have been a limited edition t-shirt, I'm not sure, but they said, I support Otago and anyone playing Auckland. And I think Dad had one of those shirts. So yeah, it was kind of drummed into you a little bit, to be honest, being from a place like Dunedin, from a region like Otago, that, you know, you're always the battler, I suppose, the underdog in a sporting context, and you always wanted to take it to the boys in the Big Smoke. So now that I've lived in said Big Smoke since, 2008, it's very much become home for me and home for my wife, who I met around 2012. So, you know, we've been, she's from Taranaki, she's from a region as well. So we kind of both found our way to Auckland, and yeah, I mean, it's definitely home now, and it's a wonderful place to live. It's very much a city, I think, that, and I say this often to people, it's very much a city that you kind of make your own path in, because it is such a big place. You know, you don't often get to every single corner of it, but there's just so many things you can do. It's a wonderful international city. It's got a great harbour, so many outdoor activities that you can do. There's a gateway to the north that's easy to get to, and you know, we love living here.
Mate, I love that. And rewinding a bit, because this is where I always like to begin, which is high school. I know that's very typical of me being a Cantabrian and from Christchurch, because we always ask, what high school did you go to? And I know which one you went to, Jeff, because you went to Bayfield High School. And from memory, there's quite a lot of notable alumni, including Anna Grimaldi, Daniel Loder, and weirdly David Bain as well, which I'm not sure is probably something that Bayfield wants to remember. But I remember seeing an interview, you said that one of the things that really inspired you from a young age was the fact that Daniel Loder went to your high school. Was that kind of where you started becoming a bit more interested in sports, fitness, and everything else in between?
Absolutely. I think we all remember, and we all have a formative memory, I think, of a sporting moment or an occasion or something we saw on TV, whether it's, you know, Daniel Loder winning gold at Atlanta. I mean, that was, I remember standing in the lounge watching that. It was one of those moments where you thought, wow, this guy from Dunedin who went to Bayfield just down the road has achieved this, and you sort of start thinking about possibilities, and it's really, really inspiring, right? So yeah, I mean, it was a great school to be at, so close to where we grew up in Waverley on the peninsula there in Dunedin. I went to Grants Braids Primary School, so it was sort of very local in terms of where I was educated. So Grants Braids Primary School, then actually went to John McGlashan College over in the city for sort of my form 1 and 2 years, and then went to Bayfield High School for year 9 through to year 13. And it was just a great school. I mean, the teachers were fantastic and had a whole range of things we could do academically, sporting wise. So that was the perfect fit for me. And but yeah, certainly, you know, the alumni, as you say, we've had some interesting alumni over the years. Anna Grimaldi, had the opportunity to interview her and catch up with her over the years, as sort of in my capacity as a sports journo, and just seeing what she's achieved on the world stage is incredible. You know, she's such a wonderful person. Always has a smile on her face. Always has time for other people, and I think that's, you know, that's probably the most inspiring part. Is, you know, these people like Anna are doing some amazing things, you know, at the track for New Zealand, but it's just the fact that they've got time for people and can share their stories that's you know, that's so inspiring. But yeah, certainly remember Daniel doing that, standing there in the lounge watching the TV and seeing him win gold was pretty special.
You talk about the approachability as well, and I kind of like to make the comparison with what people say, Southern hospitality in the US, and I feel like there's a lot of Southern hospitality in Dunedin as well. Do you feel like that has kind of continued with you throughout life, that you kind of have this very different kind of way of being compared to maybe the traditional Aucklander or traditional New Zealander being from the Central Otago region?
I think it's hard to say. I think there's good people everywhere, and you know, and I've always tried it, sort of the way I was raised, to try and, you know, give people the time of day and listen to other people and hear their stories. And I think that's part of the reason I probably got into broadcasting, really, or this line of work, was that I just love people. You know, I love dealing with people and collaboration and helping others. So yeah, I suppose there's an element of that. You know, we're you know, living in a place like Dunedin and Otago, you're kind of always striving to put your best foot forward to kind of make something of yourself, I suppose. And yeah, that was kind of instilled in me, I suppose, from a young age, is try to achieve and try to do the best you can. And you know, I always had some good people around me that were so inspiring and helpful. And I think, you know, that's probably something I've taken forward with myself as well. Just, you know, giving other people an opportunity and listening to them.
So, Jeff, you talk about as well that your dad was a big footy fan. I'm guessing at
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
That age as well, you were playing rugby yourself. Were you representing your high school? How did that kind of come about that you eventually kind of moved into, obviously, fitness and becoming a gym trainer as well? Because I saw that you obtained a certificate in personal training. And my first thought was one of two things. One, either you were potentially going to become a part of the training staff for probably a rugby club or a cricket club, or you initially were doing, obviously, a lot of work in the sports side of things, maybe at high school, and then decided to kind of transition into obviously the other side of the fitness game.
Yeah, so for starters, rugby for me, I was introduced to rugby at the Pirates Rugby Club, which was out near the beach in Dunedin when I was about 6 or 7. So I started playing junior rugby for Pirates, and yeah, it's a great club. It's had its up and downs over the years. Didn't have a premier men's team for a long time, and you know, there's some good people down there at the moment trying to revitalise the club and get things up and running again. But, you know, that's sort of where I was introduced to the sport and kind of fell in love with it. I played rugby at Bayfield High School as part of the First 15. Not a notable First 15 by any stretch of the imagination. Certainly not in the same kind of breath as a King's High School or an Otago Boys or John McGlashan College. But, We certainly it gave as good as we got. We tried, and I really enjoyed that. You know, loved playing rugby at high school. Didn't really follow on after high school when I moved to Christchurch for tertiary education. But I certainly loved, you know, growing up playing the game in Dunedin. But in terms of the fitness side of things, yeah, that was really interesting. So when I got to the end of high school, I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. Really, I mean, I'd done the odd radio course through school and sort of my last couple of senior years, sixth and seventh form, I'd done a couple of things in Dunedin, which kind of piqued my interest a little bit. But I really enjoyed the fitness side of things as well and thought maybe that was an opportunity to do something in that space. In fact, I actually went to Outward Bound actually was one of the first things I did around, I think it was sixth form. There was a scholarship that was offered to Bayfield High School, and believe it or not, no one wanted to to go on this course up to Anakiwa and the Marlborough Sounds. And I was sort of this 17-year-old who loved the outdoors, getting outside and you know, tramping and all that sort of thing. And I thought, this is an awesome opportunity. So I went and saw the deputy principal at the time, Gavin Layton, I think it was, and he said, yeah, there's this scholarship. Do you want to go? And I said, absolutely. So what's involved? He said, no, it's all paid for. It's free. So essentially it was a 3-week holiday in Anakiwa in the Marlborough Sounds. Well, that's how I sort of looked at it anyway, but it was such a transformative experience. It was so amazing in terms of everything that they had. I mean, we had this 3 or 4 day expedition through the bush around Anakiwa, where we had a guide following us. We had to figure all this out ourselves. We did blindfolded rock climbing. We went out on the water on these boats, and we were running every day actually as well. So it all kind of culminated with this half marathon at the end, which is generally what they do in Outward Bound. They get you running every day, and then at the end of it, they thrash you with this half marathon through the bush, which was incredible. So that experience at Outward Bound in sixth form kind of made me think, maybe I could do something with this when I leave school. I'm really interested in it. Got a chance to see the way that the instructors and the teachers work with the kids, and I found that interesting. So when I got to seventh form, I actually went to a New Zealand Army work experience week in Burnham, of all places, because I just thought, you know, hey, it's another week off school, more or less. No, that wasn't the case. But this popped up, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to head up and to Christchurch and see what this is all about. So I actually loved it. I really loved it. So we went in, and, you know, you had, I think it was 2 days, maybe 2 or 3 days at Burnham. And sort of it was just essentially a crash course and kind of being a soldier, or what that experience was like, and I loved it. Like, we're up every morning and crack of dawn carrying logs, and firemen's carry your other team members crawling through freezing rivers and all this sort of gear on, getting yelled at the entire time. And I actually quite enjoyed it, and I thought, okay, maybe that's it, maybe this is something I could do. But sort of after all of that, I still wasn't 100% sure, but I knew that when I left high school, I needed to do something. I needed to kind of continue the momentum and carry on with education. So, I started looking into a few things, and personal training was an option at the Otago Polytechnic. So ended up enrolling there in a certificate in personal training and exercise prescription, and did that. Whilst I was doing that, I took a job at Les Mills in Dunedin and worked as a personal trainer for a couple of years, which was great. And funny you should say, had I worked with a sports team, I was actually working at the time with the Otago Rugby Union, working with their women's team as their fitness trainer for a brief period. So I kind of got an opportunity to see what it was like in that environment too, in a kind of a sports coaching environment on the rugby side of things, which was really interesting. So that's kind of where it all started for me after school and the fitness side of things. But it was at that point that I realized it probably wasn't something, whilst it was certainly an interest of mine, it wasn't something I necessarily wanted to take forward as a career long term.
That experience of you working with the women's rugby team as well give you a bit of sympathy towards kind of the efforts and the amount of time and dedication a lot of players have to put into those sorts of like fitness routines, as well as also being match ready. Was that kind of like a bit eye-opening for you in that sense as well, to get a new appreciation for the sport? Because I think a lot of people just say you turn up to practice maybe 2 or 3 times a week and that's kind of it, but like there's a lot more that goes outside of the practice as well.
Yeah, I mean, usually you're the player lining up on the goal line having to do these shuttle runs, right? And then you're the person standing there telling others to do it. So it wasn't – I felt bad, to be honest. That's probably why I said I'm never going to do this again, because I felt horrible having to make people do this and make the players run back and forth and get ready for these games. So maybe that's where I was like, nah, this just isn't for me. I need to do something else, potentially in the rugby space, which obviously ended up happening. So I think all of those experiences, no matter what you do in life, particularly when you're finishing off at high school, I think you should try do as many things as you can, and and work as many places as you can. I had, you know, so many different after school jobs. I worked at a supermarket. I worked at Hoyt Cinemas for a few years. Great, you get a free movie, all that type of thing. But like I said at the start, being able to deal with people, I think, early on in customers and that type of thing, I think it's really useful for a young person. So I was certainly lucky that I had those opportunities.
So you would have done the infamous broadcasting school interview then, which everyone has to go through at some point, which is that the two-person panel, one's the good cop, one's the bad cop. And I'm sure from your customer experience at Les Mills, you've obviously dealt with some pretty interesting customers in your time. What do you remember from that interview going into broadcasting school? Obviously, pre-acceptance, because you have to do the, I think from memory, you have to do the essay, then you do the interview. I don't know if that was the case back then, but it was the case when I was getting accepted. Do you remember that interview vividly or no?
Yes, I do. I do remember the interview. And you're right, it was daunting, and we were also warned about that. So I kind of went in with, a reasonable level of preparation, I suppose, but you know, it, still nothing's going to prepare you really when you're sitting down in front of this panel of industry legends, and you know, it's relatively intimidating for a young person who's trying to get into broadcasting school. So no, I certainly remember turning up, and I think Hamish Clark was there on the panel. Paul Norris, God rest his soul, he was there as well. Paul was obviously head of school. I think who else was on the panel? Might have been, maybe it was Brian Pauling or Joss Darling or maybe Vicky Wilkinson Baker. I can't quite remember who the other person was, but very much, because certainly Joss Darling, absolutely lovely. And like, so I think there was very much a kind of a good cop, bad cop thing going on with the panel. I don't know whether that was just my take on it, but you tried to answer the questions as best you could and give a good account of yourself. But no, certainly beforehand, I remember, I think part of
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
As you said, the application process was putting in an essay, but certainly there was a voice aspect to it as well. And I remember going down to the radio house in Dunedin and recording who was that that did that with me? It escapes me. It annoys me that escapes him too, because he was really helpful early on and sort of helping me get accepted to the school with that. But I remember putting in a voice, just a tape of me reading the news or whatever it was. It might have been a voice break for radio or something like that. And went to Christchurch, did the interview, and then a week or so later, I hadn't heard anything. So naturally, you're a little bit on edge and wondering what you're going to do with your life. Maybe you're going to go back to the army or go back to personal training, whatever it is. And then I remember getting a letter, actually. It was a letter in the mail. It said, congratulations, you've been accepted. So that was massive for me. I remember thinking, you know, I was just so proud that I'd been accepted, because obviously, and I'm not sure what the numbers are like these days at the broadcasting school, but I think certainly then numbers to get into the different classes, of which there were TV, obviously radio and journalism, I think, you know, they only accepted, Jamie, 20-odd people a year or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it was pretty limited numbers. So when I got in and accepted, I was pretty stoked.
And that was the start of it all for you, Jeff. And like, in terms of some of the other people that you were kind of rubbing shoulders with at that time, is there any that you're still kind of working with, connected with, talking to every now and then, even now in the present day?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, you know, you think you look back now and you go, who was in my year at broadcasting school? Because, you know, certainly there have been people in the industry, a lot of people in the industry have gone through the school and have gone on to big things in media, and certainly people I look up to as well, and others like Mike McRoberts, for example, was there. Obviously had an opportunity to work with Mike for a number of years at TV3 News Hub. So a lot of good people have gone through the school. Daniel Bell, actually, Donnie Bell, who is a great man. He's a wonderful man. He was actually on the Water Lad podcast with James Marshall recently, and he's doing great things in the Heartland rugby commentary space. He's a real character, Dan, and Donnie, and he's a great man. So I went through broadcasting school with him. He was in the radio side of things. There's a number of other people that have gone into different roles. Kim Vanell actually as well. Like Kim had a long career in New Zealand as a journalist and is doing some amazing things overseas too. So yeah, a lot of people, and it kind of either side of the year, you know, there are some household names like Jack Tame. I think might have been the year beforehand or something like that before me that at school. But you know, obviously Jack's story is everyone knows Jack's story. So like there's a lot of people that have gone through, and you just feel really proud that you're a part of, I suppose, part of that history and had the opportunity to train and learn your craft with some wonderful teachers, who were just excellent in the way that they prepared us for the industry. Because a lot of people often ask, how do you train to become a broadcaster? I think, you know, there's, you know, part of it to some people comes naturally. There is a lot of craft element to it as well. But, you know, ultimately, you know, your teachers are so important. And we had some fantastic teachers at the school. And I can always remember, you know, a lot of people will talk about shorthand and T-line and getting ready for court reporting. Where, to be fair, I think that's the only place I use. I think I still use a couple of – I think I use a little bit these days when I'm writing down the groceries and stuff on the shopping list. But I don't think I've used it since. But it was certainly one of those things when I look back, I smile, because we were up at 8 o'clock or before 8 o'clock every morning, and we were across to the, you know, to the room where we did T-line with Julie Price. And, you know, and I'll always remember her – you know, writing out these sentences on the board that we had to, you know, transcribe into shorthand, and it was like, we will be able to, and we all had to repeat that, and I think we had to get to like 80 words a minute or something to pass. And I remember I was one of the last in the class to get it, because I couldn't wrap my head around T-line, around shorthand, but I eventually got there and got the pass mark I needed, the all-important pass.
And the thing that I've noticed, and I can remember my time at broadcasting school, is it was very obvious who were the people that wanted to be sports journos. It was the Blazers were coming out pretty early on, and you're like, you're definitely wanting to be a commentator. Was that kind of something you very, very early established when you attended, or were you a bit more open-minded to the fact that you're like, I'm going to potentially be in general news, maybe like this is something that I can pursue later down the track? Or did you always have your mindset on the fact that you wanted to be working in sports journalism or sports broadcasting?
It's really interesting because on the school, and someone pointed this out recently, there was a photograph of me in my school yearbook from year 13 at Bayfield. And I had no idea I'd written, you know, it was so long ago, but I think the other students had to write down what your probable career would be. And so that obviously when you opened up the yearbook at the end of the year and you take it home, you go, oh, that's what they thought I was going to end up doing, right? So they said probable career sports commentator. And I hadn't written that down. But I always remember at school, you know, with my good friend Will McDougall, you know, we were always doing you know, always trying to take off other commentators and have a laugh and do this and commentate the school athletics and just kind of have a bit of fun with it, right? So I think it always came from a place of just passion and just kind of mucking around, joking around at school. But when I got to broadcasting school, I guess, as you say, I sort of thought about it a little bit more kind of holistically about, you know, what could I do in this industry? Where could I go? Do I do, you know, and I had to have that discussion early on as to whether or not I went into the radio side of things or into the journalism side of things, because my father was a radio DJ in Dunedin for a long time at 4XO. Neville Mack, and he worked in Wellington and other places around the country. So it was kind of in the blood, the radio side of things. But yeah, I was very much interested in the journalism side of things and interviewing people and reporting and the live aspect of television as well. And yeah, so early days, to answer your question, I was probably open to anything. But as time kind of wore on and those first couple of years, I started probably angling myself more towards sport.
We've talked about this on the podcast before about the broadcasting school, and what usually happens is one of two things. People try to finish the degree, or they get poached before they can even make an attempt to go for that coveted bachelor's degree. So for you, Jeff, what was the situation that happened with you? Because it kind of looked like, based on your history, that you got poached before you even had the chance to kind of finish the full year. What happened to you, and how did you kind of proceed into 3 News and working at Radio Live as well as a reporter?
Yeah, so I started doing a little bit of part-time work while I was at broadcasting school for Radio Live. I kind of knew I needed to front foot that and get into that space. And, you know, like, you're always encouraged to take the initiative and you know, knock on doors if you like, or see if there's any availability to do some part-time work or casual work at the local station. So I think most of us would have in that class, you know, knocked on the door of News Talk ZB or knocked on the door of MediaWorks and just said, hey, look, is there anything we can do on the weekends or whatever it may be? And I probably did a little bit of work across the board in Christchurch, you know, for different networks and whatnot. I did to kind of rack my brain to think about that. But Radio Live was where I started to get a little bit of traction while I was at broadcasting school. I remember Chris Forster, who I ended up working with for a number of years, lovely guy, Chris, and a very good writer. And he was someone who gave me an opportunity to essentially do voice reports for the Crusaders games for Radio Live. So this was when obviously Jade Stadium was around. I was there sort of 2007, 2008, pre-earthquake. So with that wonderful big stadium, Jade Stadium, used to go along there, watch the Crusaders games and, you know, file a voice report for halftime or full time for the network. And that was kind of my first professional gig, really, doing that sort of.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Work. So I was fortunate enough to be able to, you know, talk to people like Chris and others, and then they could hear what I could do on air. So that was kind of the start. And then from there, when our internships rolled around in the second year of the degree, so as you know, the way that the degree works is you do your first year, your 500, I think it's called, you do your 600, whatever, you do your second part of the degree, and then you have a major project which you need to complete, your 700, and also an internship. So you can either take the internship beforehand, then do your 700 or do your major project, or you do it the other way around. You finish off your classwork essentially and you go and do your internship. But for me, we had some family connections in Auckland who worked at TVNZ and TV3. Tony Smith, great man, sadly passed, but Tony Smith and Kim Hurring both worked in the industry a very, very long time, wonderful people. Tony was a cameraman at TVNZ and at TV3, a long time in the industry, and I think I touched base with them and said, look, is there any chance I could come up during one of the semester breaks or whatever it was, and you know, maybe get some work experience. And so they put a word in with TVNZ and TV3 and opened up that opportunity. So I had a week at TV3, a week at TVNZ. Tony actually helped me film a piece to camera beforehand that was sent away to the networks, and that's how the opportunity to do some work experience came up. And so I went up to TV3, and I remember dealing with Keith Slater at the time. So that was kind of the, in some ways, it was still the golden days of TV3 and 3 News in that building. John Campbell and Carol Hirschfeld were still a team together. You know, the sports department, you know, had Hamish Mackay, Michelle Pickles, Tony Ciprian was still an absolute legend. Tony Ciprian, he was still around doing his thing, producing and making people laugh. So it was a cool environment. Angus Gillies was there, you know, John Hale, Mike Brockie, you know, just absolute legends in the broadcasting industry. And so to go in there as a green, you know, person out of broadcasting school was a little bit daunting, a little bit overwhelming, to be honest. But did a week work experience there, and then I actually did a week's work experience at TVNZ as well. And Cliff Joiner, I think, was bureau chief at the time at TVNZ. But before the week ended, I think it was Keith Slater called me and said, "Do you want to come and work at TV3?" And I was just blown away. So I had this offer before I think I even went to TVNZ for that week of work experience. So at the end of it, I told Cliff, and you know, I think he was understanding that, you know, there was a great opportunity there. They didn't have anything at the time to offer. That was very much a case of finish the degree and then we'll see what's around. So, you know, naturally when something's offered to you, you know, that's what you're working towards, getting a job at a place like that, you say yes. So I said yes, and I left Christchurch to begin the internship part of the degree, obviously with the intention at some point of finishing the rest of it and getting the piece of paper. But as things turned out, you know, the internship rolled on, and you know, I remember we had this. I think there was like a set rate of that you'd get paid on your internship, right? So it was really minimal. It wasn't a great deal of cash. It wasn't a huge chunk of change. Especially back then, 2007, 2008, kind of just covering your rent, but you had a few savings and things. But I just remember at the time not even worrying about it. I'm like, I'm working at TV3. This is awesome. How good is this? You know. And then I remember I was working on Sports Tonight, so that's where I kind of started out on that late night sports show with Dobbo, Howard Dobson, great man. You know, a laugh a minute. Just a cool experience working there. You know, straight off the bat, going into Sports Tonight. Greg Hay was our producer, and like a number of people have come through there. We had, you know, that have gone on to great things. But Sports Tonight was a great place to work initially, just to cut the teeth and I guess learn, you know, learn what broadcasting was about in that environment professionally. And you know, you'd be tasked with writing VOs, VSVs, closers, all sorts of things. And because it was such a neatly packaged 15-minute magazine-style sports show that would run after Nightline, you know, you could really sink your teeth into it and try things and make mistakes and develop your voice. And so that's kind of where it all started. But I remember during that first few months of being on Sports Tonight, Janine Sinclair, the news manager, she came up to me and said, "Can I have a chat to you for a second?" I said, "Yeah, that's fine. What's up?" And I think she even pointed out, she said, "It's not a lot of money, is it, this internship payment, is it? Like, this, it's not a lot. I think we can work something out for you." And I was like, "Oh," and I was just so blown, like, "Oh, are you sure? Like, yeah, only if that's okay." Like, you know, and then I remember, I'll never forget, like, I think she said, Keith's going to talk to you. And so a couple of days later, Keith opens his door, and his office was just across from the Sports Night area. And he goes, "Jeff, come in here, mate." So I came in and he goes, how does this number sound? How does this look?" And he just had a calculator. And on the calculator, it just said 30,000. And he just points the calculator towards me. And I'd never seen a number like that in my life. So I was like, "Oh my God, Thank you. No, really, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So that was my first official job offer, was to work on Sports Tonight at TV3 with Keith Slater showing me a calculator with $30,000 on it. That was my first deal. Done.
Damn.
So there you go.
And there was no, like, were you kind of like packing yourself at that point, being like, is he going to come in here and like make a joke about it and be like, you've been going around and telling people what we're paying you? Like, were you kind of like, well, you did kind of expect that there was going to be an offer put forward. Like, was there like a little bit of a thought in the back of your mind being like, I feel like it's coming?
I had no idea. Like, I was just enjoying the internship. To be fair, I would have been happy to have completed the 6 months and then see what happened after that. But the fact that, you know, they did that, I was really appreciative, and, it was something I won't forget. It was my first start, wasn't it? So it was a cool moment really for me. And what followed at TV3, I'll forever be grateful for, because it's where I learnt, I cut my teeth and learnt learnt the craft really.
Yeah, because you moved pretty quickly in terms of, obviously there was this period between you doing your internship and then working professionally, getting on that first contract, and then you moved to becoming the midday news anchor at 3 News for close to 6 years, well, and then turned into News Hub, of course. What was that like? Because that's a pretty big jump going from traditional reporter to then being thrown in front of the camera every day, midday. Like, how did that change things for you from a professional perspective, but also from a personal perspective as well, because that must have felt like a massive jump?
Yeah, it was a big jump. I think I got some opportunities early on to have a go at that, and I think that was the whole thing that attracted me to TV3 and why I enjoyed it so much early, was because there were these opportunities to do different things and to make mistakes and try things and talk to different people and observe people, especially, and see how other people did things. And I think I can't remember exactly how that started, but I think early on, Sasha McNeil was the midday anchor for a long time, and obviously a very, very good presenter. And still doing, an amazing job today and what she's doing. But so having people like that to kind of look up to and see how they operated was massive for me when I started out. And then getting an opportunity to do that, I don't know, I think part of that potentially always came a little bit more, I found it maybe came a bit more naturally to me, being in studio and being in that environment. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the craft of newsreading and, being, I guess, that conduit between a lot of hard work behind the scenes.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
People crafting these wonderful stories and all those things that went with that, and then being the person to actually present that, I always felt there was a lot of responsibility to do a good job and make sure that, you were clear, concise, warm, all those sort of things. So I was really lucky to get a lot of opportunities early on to do that, and it eventually just became something that became more of a full-time role. I was working actually at the time in kind of a hybrid situation, so I was working at Radio Live at the same time on a contract as a sports reporter, and then part of my job was actually obviously to come to TV3 every day and read the midday news. So I kind of had this split role between the radio world and the TV world, but that suited me perfectly early on, being able to have the best of both worlds, you know, learning how to write, develop the voice in the radio environment, and then go to TV3 and be in a studio environment like that was awesome.
Do you feel it also gave you the opportunity to handle pressure a lot better as well? Because radio and TV are completely different beasts, especially live television, you anchoring the live midday news. That's a whole different feeling that you have, a whole different stress that you might have as well. And radio obviously gives you a little bit more time to be present and kind of take your time with things. Do you feel like it was kind of like the best position that you could have been in, having those two things at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a great mix for me. You know, I think we had, you know, and I still to this day think, you know, we had have had some of the best presenters that you could imagine that have come out of TV3, so in 3 years. So to be there and watching them operate and how they do things and, you know, different styles. I mean, everyone's got a different style. I think that's the beauty of broadcasting. No two people are the same in the same space. And, you know, like John Campbell, for example, what you see is what you get, that infectious energy, that just draws you to him, right? And when he's presenting, you watch because he just pulls you in. He's got that gravitational effect. He's got his own orbit, right? And so for me, it was learning how to, I guess, bring my own personality to that position. And I think still to this day, it's something that just takes years and years of work. Because initially, you know, early on, you're just reading the auto cue, and I think that's something I could do reasonably well. Was read the auto cue, but then I started to understand that there was a few more, there was a bit more nuance to the role and how you did things. And obviously watching, you know, Hillary and Mike do such a fantastic job, you know, you kind of observe and see how they do things and sort of bring that to your own work as well. But ultimately, you know, it was the best of both worlds for me, and you know, something I look back on fondly.
And you must look back fondly on things like being able to report at the 2016 Rio Olympics, which must have been a pretty huge moment for you. I know for a lot of people working in journalism, that's kind of like the ideal, especially in the sporting world, being able to go to like what is probably the biggest sporting event in the world. Is it kind of like you still look back on those times and be like, is this even real? Especially because you talk about the day you walked into TV3 and you saw, like, yeah, the equivalent of the kings of broadcasting, but now you're going to see basically the royalty of sporting excellence as well. How was it for you kind of landing in Rio de Janeiro, kind of jumping off the plane and knowing, shit, I'm going to the Olympic Village now?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'd like to think, you know, like through my career, I've kind of taken things in my stride, and perhaps I need to get a bit better at you know, relishing the moment. And it's not that I don't, but it's that I think in the moment you're working and you're kind of focusing on what you're doing at the time. And so now that I look back and reflect in conversations like this, yeah, it was an incredible moment for me going to the Olympics in Rio. Like it was special. We had a fantastic team. And I think, you know, the general feeling, having worked at TV3 for almost 10 years and in that newsroom, as you know, that the common theme that comes out of there, I'm sure from people you talk to, is that we were always kind of running on the smell of an oily rag. We were always the underdog, if you like, in the news environment, always having to hustle to get that story, to break the news. And kind of that's, you know, that's part of you, you know, when that's indoctrinated into you, you know, with learning there in your formative years in broadcasting. So going to Rio, there was very much a sense in myself of, you know, trying to work as hard as possible and, you know, hustle for those stories. And I was kind of in a hybrid role there too. So I was working for Radio Live. I was writing for online at the same time. And I was also obviously doing stuff for TV, live crosses and tracks and things. So it was very, very busy. And yeah, you know, I saw Lydia Ko pick up the silver medal in the golf. You know, there was Lisa Carrington. I'll never forget seeing Lisa Carrington on the Lagoa paddling to gold. And it was just incredible. Like looking down, and then you had the just all the colour of Rio, you know, and it was a beautiful day. You looked over to the left, out on the hill, you saw the Christ the Redeemer statue. And I think that was probably the moment, Jamie, where I thought, oh, God, I'm at Rio, you know, I'm at the Olympics 2016. This is so special. But then again, you get sucked back into what you're doing, which was, you know, covering Lisa's event. And, you know, I think she won it by, you know, just 6 odd inches or something like that.
So, Jeff, you touched on one thing, which was talking about how TV3 kind of always worked on the smell of an oily rag. Do you feel like TV3, in a sense, you guys were always the rebellious sort of children in the corner? You mentioned as well that it was like you guys were kind of trying out new things, always testing the waters, trying to work a bit harder as well. Is it something that you've taken to other roles as well, even despite the fact that maybe, for example, your now new role working with the team at Sky, do you feel like that's something that's kind of continued on, that same sort of mentality?
Yeah, I think so. I think so to a degree, you know, and I think that's really, really a good thing, because you're always trying to see the opportunity in what you're doing, and whether or not you've missed something or whether something could have been done could be done better. So certainly it's definitely an attitude and I guess a work ethic I've tried to take forward from the days at 3 News and TV3, because yeah, that you know, that was the situation. We were always up against it, and I think we always tried to celebrate those moments in the newsroom where someone, you know, has broken a story, or that they've done it a slightly different way, or we've got a scoop that you know that the opposition didn't manage to get their hands on, and so you were always celebrating those wins, and yeah, I definitely think it served me well, put it that way, in terms of what's happened with the rest of my career.
And I think the thing that always makes me sad, and I remember when the news broke as well, was the fact that obviously News Hub at midday was axed, and then a few years on, looking down the track after things like COVID and everything else in between, TV3 or News Hub as it was known, ended up going under. And for you, how did you take the news when you found out that the middays were being axed? And then on top of that, what was your feelings after finding out that News Hub itself was just closing? Was it like, do you look back on that moment and kind of think about it as a kind of sad thing? Or do you feel like it almost happened at the right time for you to be able to move on to something else and go down that new path and kind of find that new place for yourself?
Yeah, that's interesting. Look, I kind of always tried to, you know, stay relatively in the moment with work. But toward 2016, you know, I'd come back from the Rio Olympics, had a phenomenal experience there, and came back, and I think even that year was the year I read the 6 o'clock news as well a few times. So I think for me, you know, I'd managed to achieve all these things at TV3 and 3 News, and perhaps part of you, I'd been there 9 years at that point. I think part of you at that sort of stage of your career, you know, maybe starts thinking about what else could you do? What else could you be doing in that environment? Is there something else you could try? And, you know, the fact is that there's really only one place you could work across the road if you're a reporter, and that's in the TV space at least, and that was TVNZ, TV1, and I'd never really explored that. So when I came back from the Rio Games and obviously midday wrapped up and there were these different changes and things, I suppose that was the catalyst to sort of make me sit there and think, okay, what am I doing? And, you know, it's not a conversation you have with yourself every day. You know, as I say, you grind away, you chip away at the place you're working, and you get on with it. And that's certainly what I did for a number of years and really enjoyed it. Had some wonderful chances and opportunities to do different things. But yeah, I certainly started thinking, what else could I maybe do? And then I thought of Sky, and Sky, in a way, was a place that really, you know, it was very hard to get an opportunity at Sky because jobs were just never really advertised for, they certainly weren't advertised for presenters or, you know, commentators or anything like that. Obviously all internal kind of thing. And I just remember seeing seeing an ad for a producing role. And I'd done a fair bit of producing and radio and setting up weekend sports shows, that type of thing, a lot of sub-editing in the newsroom as well. So I'd done a fair bit of that sort of thing and thought, okay, maybe I could try my hand at this. But I more saw that as a way in, really, as an opportunity to open the door there and get involved and to be completely honest with you, just do something quite different, because when you've been doing the same thing, you know, year in, year out for a while, sometimes it is actually nice to, I guess, take that pressure valve off yourself and just release that and do something completely different. And Highlights Producing, which is what I went into at Sky, was completely different. And it was quite cathartic, actually, being able to go and do something like that that was it just gave me that escape, and it's something I think I needed. I didn't actually know at the time that I needed it, but after doing that for a couple of years, I thought that was a really good move. And obviously from there, managed to rub shoulders with a few people in the Sky offices, and obviously one thing led to another.
Is it almost like going back to basics, Jeff, in a sense, where you're stripping away all of the things that you could have done in terms of, like, you're presenting, you're reporting, you're doing everything else, and taking it back to that, like, core moments of being like, how do I put together an interesting, real and interesting thing for someone to be able to watch? Is that kind of where you found yourself in that sense, where you're like, I need to kind of fully understand what is it people want, what is it people need when they're wanting to see these highlight reels? Is that kind of a way that you saw it, or is it more or less you're like, I kind of am just readjusting to finding my new role and eventually moving up through Sky Sport?
I think definitely part of it was transitioning to the attraction for me was being able to transition to a company like Sky with such a rich history in sports broadcasting, because I think at that point, you know, I'd come from the situation at TV3 where I was a midday news anchor, and as I said, I was also in this hybrid role as a sports reporter. So I was doing two different things, which was a really unique situation to be in, which I was loving, I was enjoying. But I think, and I remember having discussions with people about it, you know, about the fact that at some point in time, I'm going to have to make a decision. And I think, you know, right at the start, when you asked about broadcasting school and whether or not at that point I decided that, you know, I'd wanted to become a rugby commentator one day. Sure, part of me loved commentary, but at the time, you know, this opportunity was presented to me at broadcasting school to try different things. And so I guess I took that with me for the first 9 years of my career. But as I say, at some point in time, I had to make a call as to whether or not I was going to go down, you know, the news path, general news, and stick it out with presenting, with news anchoring, or whether I was going to do something different. And I guess I made that decision, didn't I, when I went to Sky, because I knew by going there that there would be a possibility, maybe, that I could explore, you know, sports broadcasting with them. And so, yeah, I saw the highlights producing as certainly as a way of opening that door. I really enjoyed it, though. Funnily enough, I got to work with some former colleagues there who I actually worked with at Radio Live. So, you know, such a small industry. And as I say, I did that for a couple of years, really enjoyed it, did something completely different, kind of gave me that reset, that mental reset I needed as well. But ultimately, it was the decision I'd made that right from that point on, I wanted to pursue sports broadcasting and I wanted to do it at Sky.
So that first opportunity, that first tap on the shoulder, Jeff, where did it come from in terms of Sky being like, Jeff, we love what you're doing and the highlight producing, but we reckon you should be behind the mic or you should be in front of the camera. Do you remember that moment that you got the tap on the shoulder, or was it you that hunted it down?
Definitely. I certainly had to hunt that down and you know, it was, I mean, I could have continued on highlights producing, but I remember having a chat to the powers that be in the sports production office and just asking, you know, if there was an opportunity to do some of this stuff that I've been doing at TV3 for 9 odd years. So I thought it was an opportunity to help them out, really, and offer my services. And so when they did need the odd backup presenter on a show like The Breakdown or whatever it may have been, eventually an opportunity popped up and I got the chance to step in as a backup. And I think that was my first experience on Sky was in studio was as a backup host for The Breakdown. So I ended up doing that. And then in terms of the commentary side of things, I had a discussion early on with the head of sport and said, look, is there any opportunity maybe to try commentary and to get involved? And basically told that there was a long line, a bit of a queue of people, and that was fair enough, you know. So I thought, okay, that's fine. I'll just chip away. And then I kind of a few months passed, and I thought, well, I better try and make this happen myself if I can, or try and craft an opportunity. So because I was in highlights, I thought, what can we do here? So I remember, we'd obviously cut highlights of Super Rugby games and all sorts of things. So I remember finding a game of Super Rugby. It was a Crusaders game, and it was a Will Jordan try. And I remember cutting the try, taking off the commentary or whatever it was that was on there, taking that off and putting my own commentary down, editing that together, and then sending that file to the sports producer with an email saying, hey, look, you know, here's an example of my commentary. Would love to have an opportunity to do this for Sky, and it didn't hear anything back. And then a few weeks later, I got an email from the producer of College Rugby, who said to me, hey, are you free next weekend? Do you want to call this game? And that's kind of how it all happened. And that's generally how I found things happened at Sky. Like, if you're in the right place at the right time, or you put your best foot forward, sometimes an opportunity would pop up, and one did. He said, look, are you free next Saturday to call, I think it was Westlake Boys against Whangarei Boys High School, North Harbour 1A, over on the shore. And I said, absolutely, I'm free. And that was my first kind of foray into rugby commentary.
Mate, that's pretty ballsy, and I got to appreciate the fact that you kind of just took it in your stride, and you're like, you know what, I've just got to shoot it to the wind, see what happens, and play it by ear, because, you know, the worst thing that they can say is no, the best thing they can say is yes, and I love that you did that. I spoke with fellow commentator, Nick Bewley, who mentioned that it's a fine art being able to describe what's happening play-by-play on the radio compared to television, where you have to have a little bit more tact in terms of what you're commentating, not giving away too much of the game because obviously there's a visual aspect, but making sure there's enough excitement to add it like a theatre. For you, Jeff, what do you feel was the thing that kind of got you to hone your kind of commentary skills early on? Because that's like the perfect setting for you, being thrown in at that point. But what were some of the early things you acknowledged when you were commentating to kind of build your own persona, your own character when you're commentating games?
Yeah, and Nick's right. I mean, a big part of commentary is the whole package, I suppose, and that's how I look at it now. It's very much, my role as a play-by-play caller, obviously calling 70%, if not more, of the game. You have an expert comments person next to you who's around 20%, and then someone who is sideline, your sideline eye, if you like, your third voice, who calls around 10%, the subs, that type of thing. So I very much look at it as a team effort, the role of commentary and what we do on Sky. It's, if you go back to the old Reithian principles from broadcasting school, you know, to inform, to educate, and to entertain, like, very much commentary encapsulates that, I think, in terms of you want to inform people what's going on, you want to try and educate them with your expert comments person who's next to you, who may have played 100 tests, like Mills Molina, for example. If we can educate people as to what's happening, there's a tick, but as well, you know, we want to entertain people. So that's something I've come to learn after, you know, having done 5 odd years of it. But certainly early on, I think, you know, you have your influences, don't you, in everything you do in your career. And we've been really, really lucky in this country to have some wonderful broadcasters, commentators, who I certainly looked up to and still look up to today, and how they do things. And, you know, at Sky in particular, you know, Grant Nisbet, Tony Johnson, you know, Ricky Swanell does a fantastic job. You know, we've got some wonderful callers who have incredibly high standards, but ultimately what you want to do, I think, is, you know, have those influences early on. They do things this way. I quite like how they do things, but I think the key thing for yourself is to try and find your own voice, really, and how you do things. And it takes a while, definitely. because, you know, commentary is so subjective. It's like anything, any art form, any creative form, right? You're going to have people that enjoy what you do, but you're going to have people that prefer another option. So I think that's something you have to wrap your head around as well, that there's no such thing, I think, as the perfect commentary. But from my perspective as a play-by-play caller, you know, being able to identify things, make things as clear as possible, explain things clearly, and again, make things entertaining and try and educate people along the way with whoever's in your team for that game is probably the key.
And you finally hit the dream position, I guess, for any commentator, especially in New Zealand, when in 2024 you made your All Blacks commentary debut, joining a very small elite group of voices in New Zealand rugby, particularly for Sky. And you mentioned Grant Nisbet, who's probably considered the most iconic voice of rugby, especially in New Zealand. Is it crazy to think, Jeff, that you're probably going to be the Grant Nisbet for the next generation of people that are watching rugby?
Yeah, I don't really dwell on that or think about that too much. Like I said, for me, I sort of take every day as it comes with my career, and I'm very lucky. I feel very, very humbled to have had the opportunity to call an All Black Test match. And in fact, last week I was commentating a first 15 game, and this is what I love about Sky, is that as a rugby caller, I've had the opportunity to obviously call a test match, call a lot of Super Rugby, call a lot of Bunnings NPC, Provincial Rugby, Heartland Rugby, Black Ferns, Sevens Rugby, you name it. I've had the opportunity to do it, and I've been very grateful. But calling First 15 as well, it sort of brings you back to where it all began. And it quite literally last week I called a game, Whangarei Boys High School against Rosmini College up in Whangarei. We were at Sky actually doing it off tube, but it made me think back, you know, 5 years ago is where it started commentary wise, calling this team, Whangarei Boys High School. And within that 5 years, as I say, like, been able to do those other things and call an All Black test last year. It's a really privileged position, and it's certainly something you don't take for granted. I think the key thing is, though, is trying to be as authentic as possible and bring as much energy and enjoyment to the role as you can. And that, to me, that's my responsibility. I think we have a big part to play in, as I say, how the game is perceived. You know, it's got its challenges at the moment, rugby, for sure. So we're very much, I think in some ways, in a broadcasting sense, custodians of that space, that product, and how it's viewed. So it's something I take very, very seriously, and I just feel very lucky and honoured to have had the opportunity to do it, and obviously looking forward to carrying on and doing as many as possible.
And I love the fact that you got to have that full circle moment, Jeff, because many other people wouldn't get the opportunity to do like both ends of the scale even later in their career, which is brilliant. And one thing I'd be curious to ask you is, I'm probably putting you under the burner a bit too much, Jeff, so you can tell me if you don't want to answer this question. What do you see as the future of the All Blacks, especially with recent performances and the growing strength of teams like Argentina? And the reason I mention that as well is because I'm going to be seeing them next month here in Buenos Aires, I think for the first time in many a years, that the All Blacks are having a test, not only here in Argentina, but also in particular in Buenos Aires, after what I would call probably something that I got bullied for a good 2 years, was the loss in Christchurch, since many people knew that I was from Christchurch and knew
too.
The Pumas beat All Blacks. Yeah. It was a vicious one, mate. So, first question, what do you see the future of the All Blacks? And two, what is your opinion of growing strength of teams like Argentina? Do you see the Pumas being a bit more of a threat?
Yeah, I think the All Blacks are in a rebuilding phase. I think as Kiwis, particularly fans of rugby and being such a massive rugby nation, there's always an expectation of success. There's always an expectation that we'll be victorious. There's always an expectation that we'll be one step ahead, that we'll be the best. And I think, you know, naturally with anything, there has to be give and take, you know, and we've been performing for such a long period of time at an incredibly high level. If you look at the All Blacks winning rate, it's just extraordinary in terms of professional sports teams over such a long period of time. So I think naturally there's going to be a time where results aren't always going to be as favourable, and there's going to be a time where the team has to rebuild. And I think the pressure of Scott Robinson coming in as an All Black coach and having the microscope put on him, the Heat, especially after all the success he had at the Crusaders. You know, again, there's that expectation that he was going to take that success on the field with that team, and it was going to follow with the All Blacks. And I think what that shows is that, you know, just because you've had success in Super Rugby doesn't mean that it's going to translate directly to the international game. He's a fantastic coach. He's a wonderful coach. He's got wonderful players, but it's a different setup, Test Rugby. It's a different environment. And it was always going to, I think, take time to build the foundations that he wanted to build with his co-coaches. He had to make new selections. He had to bring new players in. He had to select a new captain. And ultimately, you know, had to forge his own, I suppose, his own style with that All Black team. 2015, I think, was one of the best All Black teams I certainly had ever seen play. I mean, obviously watching for many years growing up, sort of they talk about the 96, 97 All Blacks being a wonderful team. It was too. It was an incredible team with some legendary players. But I think around sort of 2015, that World Cup final, you know, Dan Carter, the peak of his powers, and, you know, seven or eight All Blacks that after that period of time left, there was a gulf of experience that left with that. And you had one or two guys that were still there that we were kind of, that we'd built that team around going through to 2019, the 2019 World Cup and beyond that. So I think considering the class of 2015 and the 10 years that followed, I think we did really well to be as competitive as we were and to compete so well at those two World Cups afterwards. But naturally, like I said, every team goes through a dip. Every team has a generational team. The Wallabies, you could say, had that generational team of the early 2000s, the last time they had the Bledisloe Cup. You could argue that Ireland have just gone through a period where they've had a generational team. You could say Scotland in some ways, you know, the same, the way that they've played the game. The All Blacks have always more or less been right at the top. They've never really had a big dip. So I think it was all a shock to us when, you know, we did have a few losses, God forbid. It's a game of sport. And so Definitely. So I think for, you know, I think from that perspective, yeah, the All Blacks are rebuilding, and I think they're going in the right direction. They're going you know, they're going places for sure.
So you've had this amazing career, you've been on this incredible path in terms of changing roles. You're a media chameleon, mate. You've done radio, you've done television, you've done fronting the camera, you've done commentating. But the thing I'd love to know, mate, is who's been the biggest mentor throughout your career? Because you did talk about your father and how he had his career in radio. Was he always the man that was in your ear, or did you have other mentors as well that were kind of supporting you from the sidelines?
Yeah, Dad's always been someone that I've been able to talk to and connect with, and he's always had a fresh take on things. And obviously, having had that experience himself working in radio for such a long time, he, you know, he certainly knows the craft, and he can just be real with me, and we can talk about those things openly, and he gives his own unique take. But in terms of the industry side of things, I've been lucky to have worked at a number of different places, different newsrooms, different people, different companies, and so naturally you come across these super experienced people that that are just so rich with knowledge and experience, you know, like Radio Live early days, you know, guys that had been there for, you know, in the industry for 30, 40 years that would teach you things about, you know, writing or writing for the ear, that sort of thing. Like, you know, the Radio Live side of things, John McNeil was one of the sub-editors I worked with early on. And, you know, it was quite funny. He used to send your copy through to the unapproved folder for John. And this is, you know, really early days where you didn't really know what you were doing with writing, and he would he'd just hit backspace and he'd delete the whole thing, and then he'd two-finger type, you know, and, you know, eventually he'd say, come over here, I'll show you what I'm doing. So he'd sort of teach you how to do things. So guys like John McNeil, Chris Forster at Radio Live, and then, you know, when I went to TV3, over the years developed a really nice close relationship with someone like Hamish Mackay, who I've really looked up to. I mean, he's had such a varied career, a wonderful, wonderful sports anchor, wonderful broadcaster, wonderful rugby writer. So, you know, still to this day catch up with Hamish for coffees now and then. And then on the Sky side of things, I think a lot of it is observing your peers and those around you and how they do things. So, you know, there have been, I guess, mentors from afar as well, but you know, people have been really generous to me as well at Sky and giving up their time. And you know, had a number of conversations with TJ over the last few years about calling, and you know, Grant Nisbet's been really you know, really generous with her time as well. People like Ken Laban. So really lucky that there are people in the industry of that standing that will give you the time of day and try and help you out. But yeah, look, it's when you've been working in the industry for 15, 16, 17 years, it's kind of almost too hard to name everybody that's done something. But I think, like, I'm sure you'll agree, Jamie, you know, you everyone you deal with, you usually take something from them and how they operate, or a little piece of advice. And, you know, so I've been really lucky in that respect.
Well, I should also add, Jeff, if I feel like you have the same influence on a lot of other people yourself, because Christina, like Sue, described you as one of the loveliest and most supportive colleagues to work with. If we're ever on a call together, he would often reach out in advance to see if he can help in any way. And I can guarantee after every game, he'll ring within the hour to check in and debrief. Always supportive, but offers valuable feedback. Do you feel like because you had a lot of that early kind of mentorship from a lot of great colleagues as well, you've always taken it in your stride to be that same sort of person to other people that are up and coming in broadcasting, or are just looking for a little bit of kind of advice from yourself as well?
Absolutely. I think if you've got the ability to give some advice or help someone out, you should do it, because it's one of those industries, I think, broadcasting and media, where when you're starting out or you're quite new to a role, you can feel a bit lost, and there's not necessarily a textbook to pick up. And Christina's role, for example, as a sideline reporter, wonderful player, wonderful black firm, but when you're stepping into the role of broadcaster and you're picking up that mic for the first time, or you're a third voice commentator doing some sideline reporting, it can be daunting. And as I say, who do you talk to? Who do you get advice from? And, you know, a guy like Ken Laban's been amazing, I know, in that space for a number of different people. He's often shared his advice and wisdom, and I know that's been appreciated. So whenever I've had the opportunity to help someone out, I've always tried my best to do that. And if I can give them just one little tip or something that makes them feel a bit more confident or a little bit more relaxed on camera, or the way that they're doing things, then, you know, then I think that's the least I could do, really.
And I'll be remiss not to mention the fact that you're married to actress Gwendolyn Taylor. How did you guys ever manage to balance your two careers? Because the demands of a television career, particularly in that sort of space, as well as your own career in journalism, was it ever difficult to manage the personal life as well as the professional? Or did you guys manage to make it work because there was also that mutual understanding?
It's really funny, actually, because I met Gwen when she was working at Sky, believe it or not. I think she was in the media operations side of things while I was at TV3. So, yeah, like it's funny how things work out. Now I'm at Sky, and actually she works now as a post supervisor at Images and Sound in Auckland. So she's doing a wonderful job there. So yeah, met her when she was acting at the time, and you know, she had some great roles and did a wonderful job, and you know, that was it's really exciting for her. But you know, now she's working as a post producer and you know, doing amazing things in that space at Images and Sound with, you know, New Zealand film, TV shows and what have you. So we always managed to balance it. I think it was fairly easy. I think we had that mutual understanding of what each other did, and I think that was part of the reason, you know, we connected so well. But yeah, it certainly makes it a lot easier when you can understand the pressures that come with the job when you're working in the same industry.
And this is a quote from you, mate, which I absolutely love, and I found, and I'm glad I found it, was you said, realize and accept that sometimes life isn't fair, learn from the past, plan for the future, live in the present, don't sweat the small stuff, because it's all small stuff. Do you feel like that's kind of a lesson you've always taken throughout your career, as being like, there's going to be some stuff that might go wrong, don't worry about it, we keep moving forward, and we keep trudging on? Would you say that's kind of advice you give to a lot of broadcasters who are going through the industry, is to just keep trucking, don't sweat the small stuff, don't worry about the mistakes, and just keep going?
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me think of a conversation I had with someone I used to work with. He's no longer with us, John Matheson, who was a producer, sports producer at Radio Live, used to produce the morning sports show. And I remember one day being in the newsroom early morning. I think it might have just been John, myself, and one other or something like that in the sports area. And I don't know what happened, but you know, maybe I missed something in a story that I'd written, or didn't get something quite right, or I can't remember exactly what it was. But I remember talking to John about it, and he said, "He goes, I know you're frustrated, but is this going to matter in a week's time?" And I sort of thought, "Maybe is it going to matter in a month's time?" I said, "Probably not. A year's time?" And I said, "No." And so, you know, in that moment, like having that conversation with him, someone who'd been, you know, been through the industry for a long time, you know, he put things into perspective, and I guess that's how I've tried to look at the work we do. You know, we always try and be accurate. We strive to have the best result. We strive to break the story. We strive to put together the best broadcast, the best commentary. But ultimately, you know, we're all people, and we all have our ups and our downs, and our good days and our bad. And I think for me, that's kind of something that, as I've gone through the industry, and certainly these days, just in general in life, it's about being present, really, and parking work, you know, and moving forward. For example, in a game of rugby, if you miss something, the person watching at home, you know, they won't remember what you've done necessarily. So, you know, why should you stew and dwell on it? Certainly, learn from it, and take it forward, and try and do things differently next time. But don't sweat the small stuff. Don't dwell on the past as much, and just try and be present in the moment and enjoy what you do. And that's kind of how I'm trying to live my life these days.
If you like the podcast, I'd love for you to leave a 5-star review on your preferred podcast platform and let me know your thoughts on the show. Don't forget, you can reach out to me via Instagram at BeyondBroadcastPod or via email at BeyondBroadcastPod@gmail.com. Until next time, take it easy.